All right. Happy Sunday, everyone. Welcome to the Bite Me Fishing Show. I'm John Lopez with Captain Scott Null, Captain Dean Thomas, and Captain Caleb McCumber. As always, been a fun week here. Let's keep it going. We'll get you more on all the particulars of how to be a part of this show. And of course, the August 29th feeding frenzy and more. But let's dig right in. Chatting with you, Dean. And you were, you know, like I said, you were working on your trolling motor, telling me the story about how, I mean, that was very serious. I mean, you could have easily, you know, that thing, an inexperienced fisherman could have just freaked out. All of a sudden you got a fire on the bow of your boat, but you acted quickly. You got the fuses done. So it got me to thinking about this topic that we got about 3 weeks ago to talk about it today. Like some of the things that you quickly need, you need to learn your boat, man. You need to go in and dig in and look around and all that stuff. And maybe, you know, you need some kind of outside the box tools. Like y'all can maybe laugh at me or whatever, but this happened about 25 years ago. So I've always kept an extra cotter pin in my boat for the prop. I had a cotter pin. I don't know if it was not stainless or whatever, just snap off, or start to snap off. And the prop was hanging. So I always keep a cotter pin in there. Like, you never know. Something could break. But fuses, what else, Dean? Like some of the basic stuff that you have to know when you're out there.
Well, if the breaker wouldn't have been my if that wouldn't have been successful, the next step was fire extinguisher.
Yeah.
So, Caleb just pulled his
quick on your
out.
Feet, Dean. Yeah, you're quick on your feet, Dean.
So always know where your fire extinguisher is, and then after that, as the boat is sinking, you're going to need your flares.
So. I always wondered about that. I mean, if your boat's on fire, isn't that a flare?
That would be a flare.
Look at that small glowing red spot beside the big glowing red spot. Something must be on fire.
Why is there all that black smoke in the middle of the water?
So I guess the moral of the story is don't keep your fire extinguisher and your flares near the fire.
Man, if my boat ever catches on fire, I'm going to step out in the 2 foot of water I'm in and walk away and watch that insurance collection happen.
Yeah, the problem was I was like 2 miles outside the jetties. So
yeah, that's not, yeah.
That would have been...
it's not ankle deep out there.
And somewhere in that process, you need to intermingle some life jackets.
Sprinkle them in there somewhere. Sprinkle them in there somewhere. And,
during our captain schools, you have to have a one of the sections is you have to come up with a program for your in case you have a fire on your boat. You know, what's your process? You know, and you have to come up with this deal. And you know, and they go around, they ask everybody, and they got around to me and old Captain Roy that ran that thing. He got to mine. All these other guys, they were going to be working on tugboats and stuff, and they're coming up with all these things and special fire extinguisher. He got to me, and I said exactly what Caleb did. I said, I'm going to step out of the boat. I'm going to get my customers out of the boat, and we're going to stand there, and we're going to watch the fire.
Yeah,
that is my fire plan.
By Dean's philosophy, lately what I've needed on my boat is a pole saw, a shovel, and a lower unit.
This is true.
Perhaps a come along.
All right, back to fishing. Here's a good question. We're talking fishing again.
For those of y'all that don't know what John's job is on the show, y'all are seeing it right now.
Yeah, exactly. Hello.
Cats.
Look at this. I want to show you guys. I want to show the audience here. I've got like how many pages... How many pages of crap do I have here that I'm holding up? Look at this.
Don't go bad. Don't be good next one.
We haven't made it past the first line that says, howdy boys, here's the rundown.
Yeah.
The good news is they don't go bad.
We read, howdy boys, here's the rundown, then directly scroll to the bottom and click on the link. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
He's like, yeah. Anywho, Wahoo Man said toilet paper. I always keep toilet paper on the boat. I do.
No. Oh yeah.
I gotta have my breakfast, man.
If you're smart, you got those new
dude wipes.
Yeah, the dude wipes.
I'm approaching 20 years of no go.
I mean, those are better in the humidity than toilet
Never
paper.
Once.
See, you guys don't eat though. Dean, do you, like Caleb and Scott don't eat anything until after the trip. Do you eat
10:30 a.m.
I bring you tacos.
Well, I bring tacos, you, but I mean I don't know why how we got on this one.
I've never seen Dean speechless.
We got
I've known him a long time, never seen him speechless.
We got the bucket, we can go to the marina if you need some privacy.
This is like the dude in the submarine. Well, we got this box back here and you get a sheet and we'll turn the radio up, but people love it.
Yep. No. Yep. You go stand on the front of the boat and just whistle for a little bit.
Yeah. Like Chris just messaged John, do you actually think those boys are going to read all of that? I am ever the optimist.
There have been weeks where we actually got through the entire thing. I don't think Caleb was here.
No,
there have been.
I was absent that day.
That may have been back in the days of just me and you, John.
Yeah, this topic right here is where we're going next, if you didn't read it. And it is from one of our loyal listeners. Talking about sight casting reds in shallow grass kind of ties in with the slow bite or whatever I'm thinking, because the part of it was anything but topwaters work. So which tells me that they probably tried topwater after topwater after topwater and it didn't work. So we'll go around the horn here, starting with Dean who does this, damn near exclusively, but, so you're working some shallow grass. Okay. He said he threw 50 plus in the Brown and Root flats last weekend. No luck at all. The reds were not bedded down, just cruising. Water was grassy with about a foot of clear water above the grass to work lures. Does that, if top waters don't work, what are your go-tos? What are your strategies, Dean?
I mean, we had a good example of that whenever you and Mike were out there the other day. I stuck with top water. Mike stuck with the knock and tail from the beginning, and then you switched over somewhere in the middle. And, you know, I had a lot of blow ups, a lot of lookers and followers that just wouldn't run it down. Or, you know, the top water agitates fish. It's a good fish finder. You get an indication that something is out there chasing it, but the soft plastics, the subsurface, seem to catch a few more fish. I mean, that's so, you know, you go to something slower, something that's going to tick on the grass, slow it down in the sand holes. If you can see what's going on, you know, if you can actually locate your cast and target something, you can be a little bit more successful. But, you know, throughout the day, I had blow-ups, I had follows, and you guys tend to hook a few more fish that day, and it was directly related.
I was throwing both. He had it hooked to a weedless, so I did a weedless knock and tail. I'll tell you what, he can work that thing, man, and it's really just reeling in, but he just had the neck. Scott, I'm going to ask you, what are your options? Like, you're stumped. You've been working the top water. I know you love top waters.
Smaller and lighter. Something that'll hover. DOA shrimp, perfect. Yeah, if they're not active, they're not feeding. There are times you just can't make them bite. But it's my old Snickers theory, you know, the bite-sized Snicker. It doesn't matter how much you ate for dinner and how full you are, but if somebody unwraps a little bitty Snickers, sets it right there in front of you, what you going to do? You're going to eat it.
Yeah.
That last Whataburger fry, that little crunchy one, yeah, you know, it gets dumped out there on. That's the one you're going to eat it. Mm-hmm. So I always think along those lines of you got to make it something that is easy. They don't have to chase it. They don't have to work for it. And you put it right in front of their face, and they just, you know, they can't deny it. They, you know, they got to eat it. So the time that works. So you know, you throw that out there and you just kind of hover it in front of their face, and a fly is perfect for that. The DOA shrimp is real lightweight and it just settles really slow, and you can dance it in front of their face without having to reel it like you do with something that has lead in it. You know, lead jig head, if you don't move it, it's going to the bottom and you're in the grass and it's all jacked up. So that's my answer to it, and go smaller and the smaller the bite, it seems like it's better. They're not going to go after something really big. You know, when you're full, you don't want another steak.
Caleb, those guys covered it well, but I'm wondering, you know, you work in a lot of oyster shell, oyster beds. Anything translate there when you're just not getting a bite?
I mean, they named off the go-to stuff. If that's not working, what I did this week is I actually went to a spinnerbait just to aggravate the fish. And I don't throw a whole lot of spinnerbait in Texas. It's more of a Louisiana thing for me, but I did go to a spinnerbait to try to aggravate them, get some reactions out of that. And it worked a bit, but typically what they're saying, the smaller, lighter stuff where you can kind of little small offering. And the thing is if they're not one to eat, they spook easier. And those smaller lures, they land a little bit quieter and they move. You can move them through them a little bit better.
All right, coming up, let's get to your questions. They're straight from the Bite Me group page on Facebook, which if you haven't joined, just search Bite Me on Facebook. Be sure to hit the I agree button and you'll be good to go. That's next here on Sports Radio 610. Well, hey there. Welcome back. Going to get into taking advantage of fishing dawn to dusk here in a bit. Also, a conversation about the secret, mysterious lives, I'm serious, of coyotes when we get to hunting season never ends next hour. But let's get to your question. So this one is a very good point here. You're either out on the water really, really early, and occasionally you're out in the evening or both. On Saturday, I did both. Went out about, you know, probably I was on the water by 5:30, somewhere in there, fished for a couple of hours. And then I'm like, man, I'm not done yet. The wind's not too bad. I'm gonna go back out. So I went back out about 5 o'clock. Scott, I'm gonna start with you. That dusk to dawn bite, to dark bite. First of all, I often do it just because it's my absolute favorite time on the water. I just love everything calming down. I love the boats, not as many boats on the water. I love the, you know, how the water just sort of settles. It's quiet. You see the sun setting. I've actually told my kids, and hopefully it won't be for a while, that when I go to make sure to spread my ashes at this particular place on East Matagorda Bay at sunset, because I just love it so much. I just love it. But it's also really good fishing a lot of times. Here's the question for both you guys, but I'm going to start with Scott. A lot of times, that's a Saturday. That's a busy bay. Boats have been running all over the place, especially the place that you go to. Is there any way to, in your view, I've got a couple of thoughts, but starting with you guys, how to better your odds, you know, when you're fishing dusk to dark on like a weekend day. And I know you can, there's a lot of boats during the week too, but like on a weekend day when you're trying to just enjoy the thing, maybe catch a couple of fish before it gets dark.
Things have quieted down, so don't make a lot of noise. You know, go in quiet and, you know, maybe use your trolling motor to get on up in there where you want to be if you're going to get out and wade. But, yeah, I mean, it can be really good. This past week was a good time to do it. The tide was coming in all day, and you had a good – still had an good incoming tide late in the evening. That water was cooling off a little bit with the incoming tide. It was getting so hot during the middle of the day. I mean, my fish – every day I was out, they shut down about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. So most people were getting off the water before noon, as hot as it was. So the bay had a long, long time to settle down and get quiet again. And I didn't see a whole lot of traffic in the afternoons around the ramps or anything. So it would have been a good time to pull it off. Just go about and do the same things you would do first thing in the morning, except that you're kind of planning ahead a little more. You know, when you're getting there in the morning, you're thinking, okay, it's time. You know, it's right now, right now, right now. In the evening, you can kind of take your time a little bit more, maybe scout it out a little more, figure out where the bait is, and then ease in. Mm-hmm. That way you're not as rushed feeling, you know, because the best part's going to be right when it gets dark.
Yeah.
And so you're leading into it. It's getting better as time goes on, instead of like it has been this past week. It's get them at daylight, boys, because it's going to be over with real soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything Scott said, except tie on a topwater when you do it.
Yeah.
I love an evening topwater bite. And then sometimes I'll stay out in the dark about the first hour of the night. You know, not really considered night fishing, but I'll stay out a little bit later. But a lot of the times whenever it starts cooling off and that sun starts going down, those fish will start sliding up and doing their thing. And man, the topwater bite can be fantastic in the evening time. That's probably my favorite time to throw them over the morning time, to be honest.
My ritual is I tend to putter a lot more going into an evening afternoon bite, late afternoon bite than I would in, you know, normally. And not that I don't, but I'll putter in a long way just to really get a gauge on things. And then I'll stop a little deeper sometimes if I'm going to wait. If I'm not going to wait, I won't do this, but stop a little deeper and I wade in. I mean, so I don't want any noises, and that kind of secures the spot for me. Number one, because nobody's going to just, especially in that afternoon, in the evening, nobody's going to be running right through your spot or whatever. So I'll stop a little deeper, kind of wade in, and then wade back out because these fish, you know, tend to kind of settle in and have their one window, as you guys know. So you can just be like, have that whole area to yourself, which is one of the things I like the most about evening fishing and night, into the dark fishing, because there's no guarantees. And you guys both know this, Caleb. You could have a good wade spot in the morning. And some guys just don't care, man. They're going to be coming barreling in. But in the evening, that just tends not to happen as much. And the other thing I do a lot, and I wanted to get your thoughts, is I will throw on a topwater. But a lot of times I'll just go to the same spot where I caught fish that morning. If I caught fish that morning in a particular spot, it may not make a lot of sense. But if the major and minors coincide, I like my odds there.
Yeah, they probably slid off at some point in the morning. And I mean, we're talking about summertime fishing, of course. And then in the evening, there's a good chance they're going to slide back up. You might look at the tide scenarios and stuff like that. But, they didn't go far. They didn't slide off that morning and then swim 5 miles by any means, I don't think.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like y'all were saying, you have a lot more time to watch where the bait starts acting up at, and, you know, seeing some fish swirling on them or popping at them. And for that matter, you have a chance to see where hasn't really been run over the past couple of hours. Right.
Right.
But the beautiful thing about summertime is usually 3-4 o'clock, people that have been there all day are getting burnt out. They're ready to go home. Mm-hmm. I've caught a lot of really good fish down in Baffin, and I've done a lot of it after 2 o'clock because for some reason that crowd down there, 12:30, 1 o'clock, everybody goes home. And then about 2 o'clock, that whole area starts waking up and stuff starts happening. So I prefer the evening over anything, you know, even when it comes to sight casting or red fishing, you know, I'd rather be there from 1 to 4 than 10 to 1.
Yeah. Well, it's just gorgeous for me. It's one of my favorite things. So Scott and Caleb, I'll start with you, Scott. This is not from one of our listeners. Again, you can send us the questions at the Bite Me group page. And don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Spotify or Google Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast. But so I'm wade fishing. I think this was Friday, I think. So I'm wade fishing early. And the bite was a little deeper bite, you know, from where I was fishing. I was a little shallower because I just wanted to start there shallow, see what happened, maybe get a, you know, flounder or something in the drain that I was fishing. And a boat stops, you know, offshore on the deeper, kind of ridges out there. And sure enough, you know, which is no big deal. That was cool. That's what I wanted to be fishing. But the guys get out and they're in deeper water. They're in chest deep water, Scott. And I look to my left and there's one wader, and a little bit to his right is another wader, pretty good distance. And the one on the right, I literally saw it happen. I just happened to be looking over there. I mean, just went under. I mean, he was clearly in some mud, you know, kind of moving. And you know how that drags you and you slip and all that. And he kind of fell to the side and went under. And the reason I did is because his rod went sideways and into the water as well. I was like, oh, man. And deeper wading is a kind of a different game. And so I actually started kind of hustling to my boat to go check on him, but his buddy got him and all was good. But he was flailing around for a while. I mean, it was a no joke thing. So it got me to thinking just about something that we haven't talked a lot about. You know, wade fishing, we always, you know, talk about what we like to do, the equipment and where, you know, textures on the bay bottom and all that other stuff. We don't talk about depths of water. It's a different game, Scott, when you're in deeper water. What are some of the things that jump out at you on that?
That's what we did when I was growing up. I mean, that was the Galveston wade, man. They'd go out there to your armpits and, you know, hold the rod and reel up high all day long and wear yourself out. I don't think it's really all that necessary. You know, honestly, if it's deeper water like that, we've got trolling motors now and quieter boats. And I think that's a good spot to do a little drift fishing instead of wade fishing so much. I typically won't wade much more than waist deep. You know, if I'm wading, it's because I want to be quiet and sneak up on some fish that are in shallow water. Not really too worried about getting out deep. But I did another story time. that was an old spot in Christmas Bay that we used to wade all the time. And there was an old house out there, and it burned down during Hurricane Alicia. And so all the pier pilings and stuff were still there, and all that junk from that house fell into a big pile. So for about 2 or 3 years, it was good structure, you know, a lot of fish around it. Problem was, on a higher tide, you had to wade out there, you know, armpit deep to get do it.
Yeah.
And I'd waded out there. I had a buddy with me, and he was fishing up shallower. And I got out there, and I nailed 3 or 4 good trout, one after another. So he wades out there next to me, and he sets the hook. He says, got one. Oh, he came off. He didn't come off. He was on slack line coming right at him, and that fish torpedoed him right square in the solar plexus. It knocked the breath out of him, and his head went underwater because he got knocked, you know,
yeah.
got hit
hard. Yeah.
He swallowed water. He came up spitting, and then he'd been back down trying to catch his breath. He's spitting water, and I was laughing so hard I wasn't much help. All I could do is laugh at him.
You would have been.
Yeah, I mean, had he gone completely under, I guess I could have helped him out. But it was pretty damn funny. But I just don't do it anymore, honestly. And I don't see a whole lot of reason to. But if you're going to do that in an area, you better damn well know the area. You know where the drop-offs are. Know that place like the back of your hand. Maybe a place that you fished on a lower tide that you waded around in, and you know where all the obstacles are and where all the dangers are. I'm not real big on wading that deep anymore.
You know who does, though? One Caleb McCumber. Let's get his thoughts on this next. Welcome back. Talking about wading in deeper water.
Caleb, you're a big-time wade fisherman as well, and I'm just going to be completely honest. One of the reasons I didn't go out to that ridge, which was deeper, is for the reason that Scott said. I was waiting by myself. You know, I texted Pat, you know, our buddy Pat Gardner. I said, hey, I just want to wade. It's early. I think this is where the bite's going to be. Just want to let you know. I always do that. Let someone know just in case something happens or whatever. But a lot of guys like to wade deep, especially that's where, as I mentioned, you know, there seemed to be some fish. I didn't really care. I was just going to try to catch anything. I ended up catching a pretty good trout and one good flounder. But they were out deep. What are your thoughts on deep wading as compared to what Scott was saying?
Yeah, a lot of the times those guys that are out real deep have a yellow bucket tied to them. They're just getting out deeper to do that. I couldn't imagine trying to work a lure all day long like that. But I've had something similar happen to me. This was 10, 12. It was a long, stinking time ago. Mm-hmm. And I was in waders, and I was out real deep. I was catching some fish out there. And there's a shoreline in Matagorda where it drops off pretty sudden. Like it would surprise you. It's pretty uncharacteristic of the bay. And I was standing kind of in that slope, and the tide was coming in on me, but I'm catching fish. Well, you know, if you stand somewhere long enough, your feet kind of get stuck in the mud and buried up, and the tide's slowly coming up like it does over there. And I look down, and I've got about a half inch to go where it's in my waders. I start trying to back up the slope, and I can't really get up it. Like I'm on my tippy toes at this point. Right. And, my buddy's in the boat probably 100 yards away, and he doesn't fish a whole lot, but it's one of those, hey man, you know, take me sort of situations. Mm-hmm. Well, that morning we had, this was in my dusk till dawn days, you know, when the sun comes up, sun goes down, I'm out there for both of them. And about 10 o'clock in the morning, my buddy is like, hey, we gonna go eat or what? I said, what do you mean we're gonna go eat? He said, yeah, we'll go to the cafe over there at the harbor. And I'm like, bro. And I think I tossed him a bag of trail mix that was probably 2 years old out of the boat, right? And so I'm like yelling at him and waving to come get me. And he's over there, and he is in full protest because he's still mad about not getting to eat lunch. He wouldn't come get me. And it wasn't good. Man, for safety's sake, wear something people can see. Somebody in the trio, I know some names. I don't know that I know them all, so I'm just going to leave them all out. But somebody about got smoked during the Texas trio this
by boat
because they were wading real deep and the boat thought they were a crab trap. And from what I understood, they missed them by like 15, 20 feet. And the guy realized as a fisherman as he was passing them. Where's something people can see? There, the pastel colored, Columbia fishing shirts that I see more. I've been in College Station all day. I see more of those walking around the campus up here than I see on the coast. But they're those colors for a particular reason. You can see them. You can differentiate them. When somebody's running on the water, especially early morning, late evening, and the sun's in their eyes, it's hard to tell the difference between you. So don't go out there and get ran over by a boat. It's going to suck. You're not going to like it.
Now, Pat wades more than you do all over the place. But what would you do? What would you do in that deeper water? Would you still wade? Because sometimes I feel, and maybe Scott will want to weigh in on this later, sometimes I feel people like to wade just for the sake of wading, if that makes any sense. Because I ended up fishing after the boat left that exact same area, but I was doing my old hopscotch thing where I'd put the power pole down, fish, put the power pole down 10 feet further. It was the same effect. But what are your thoughts on when you do wade fish, or would you maybe go Scott's route and go another route?
Well, I mean, first off, Pat, I don't think Pat knows how to get his knees wet. I don't think his knees have been wet in 5 years.
Always in skinny water.
Yes. I would wade it. I wouldn't fish it out of a boat. If there was a group of fish in front of me, or if there was something out there that was holding fish like that, I would probably wade it. You could probably power pull it down, but typically when you're wading, you've got 3 or 4 people, right? Mm-hmm. But if I could stand there and fish it, I would stand there and fish it. And there's a lot of people that are listening to this right now. They're going, I'm going to wade it because I don't want to get that dang hot, you know?
That too.
If my nipples are getting wet, I'm starting to feel like, you know, there's probably something better to do. I'm not, mm-hmm. I've seen the guys out there. All you can see is their wrist and their head. You know, that's a little bit extreme to me, but you know, anything chest or below, I'd probably stand there and fish it. But that being said, I would be worn out from throwing my lures pretty stinking quick. So from a production of bite standpoint, I'd wait it. From me just being naturally lazy, I'd fish it out of the boat.
That's what I was going to ask you about, Scott, as kind of a follow-up, because it is something we haven't really talked about at all on this podcast. I think you can be more efficient sometimes if you're not wading. And maybe, I don't know if you fall in the same boat as me, so to speak. I think some people just like to wade just for the sake of wading.
Yeah, I mean, it's a common thing to do. Around the Middle Coast, everybody wades. So everybody thinks you have to wade. You don't necessarily have to. You know, there's nothing wrong with staying in the boat a little bit and covering a little more ground. Like I said, if you know there's fish in a particular area, you got some piece of structure that you want to work, ease in with your trolling motor and power pole down, or drift in and power pole down, and then you can fish it just fine. Unless, of course, you know, you got the 3 guys in the boat and 4 guys in the boat and all that, then
yeah,
that changes things a little bit. You might just have to drift it, put a drift sock out or two, and make it go real slow so that everybody can get on it.
John, I'm a bit upset that you hit your B earlier, but you didn't emphasize fish and efficient.
Oh,
there you go. I mean, come on, man.
I'm trying.
I can validate that what Scott's saying works, because I take the kids to do that all the time. There's little I call them popcorn reefs. There's little bitty old reefs that you can wade out to and fish. That's how I would do it. When I have the kids in the boat, I'll power pole down off of it, and Cade and his little buddies just, you know, catch everything they want off that reef. It definitely works.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to hop around a little bit on here on the rundown that you guys just opened, because I think this topic fits in with that. When you keep missing bites, it did actually happen to me this past week as well. A couple of tails bitten off. I figured they were small trout. So I decided to start working the bait faster you know, not slower. And I ended up catching some fish. It was smaller trout, but I still ended up catching some. But that led to the question of, you know, when you keep missing bites. It's been somewhat of a finicky, it's been back and forth bite for me. I don't know about you guys down where you've been in Louisiana and East Matagorda and Port O'Connor. I've either had like real finicky bites that have been hard to hook, or they just absolutely hammer it. When I get that finicky bite, and Scott, I had two tails bitten off, and I'm like, all right. And you would think maybe slow it down, maybe get a, you know, smaller bait. I actually used the bigger bait. I used that 5-inch, and I just started working it faster, not slower. And it worked like a champ. And I actually thought of you, Scott, because, you know, it led to the whole thing of like when you miss a fish, like on a topwater or something, a lot of people say, just let it sit. And that's counterintuitive. That's counterproductive, I should say. That's not what a bait does. A bait gets scared and acts and moves even faster. So I actually started doing that with my soft plastic, and it worked like a champ.
Well, let's talk about it next, right here on the Bite Me Fishing Show on Sports Radio 610. All right, we're talking about how to deal with a finicky bite. I do want to mention here that coming up next hour, if you love hunting and hate the coyotes or need to deal with them on your property, we're going to talk about it in Hunting Season Never Ends. Of course, brought to us every week by Belleville Meat Market. They say meat is their middle name, and it absolutely is in every way. From what you can get there at the butcher shop to their unbelievable menu, I've partaken myself. And, of course, the year-round processing, which is so, so good. Absolutely off the charts. Okay, Scott, what about that finicky bite?
Yeah, you were probably getting the reaction bite out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was before they were just kind of lazy snapping at it. And when you start speeding it up, then you got them to react a little bit better. My guys the other day had tails bitten off like crazy, but they were also catching flounder like crazy.
Yeah, it could have been that.
I haven't had a day like that in forever. I mean, these guys, they were working their baits slower, you know, just throwing the little DOA paddle tail. And that Texas croaker was the kicker. I mean, that was the perfect bait the other day. And they kept coming back with the chartreuse tail missing. And then a few minutes later, they'd hammer a flounder. I can't remember last time I picked up that many flounder and had, you know, it's always fun with no net trying to land a flounder. Try to do it off the side of a poling skiff while it's leaning over. It gets a little dicey, but it could have been flounder. You know, you said you were working slow. You could have been going closer to the bottom, and it could have been flounder that were grabbing it. It could also been.
And then all of a sudden, when I start working faster, it's a trout.
Yeah, then you're up in the water column and you're picking up trout that were up higher.
Could have been.
Yeah, it's hard to say exactly what that was, but typically when I start seeing tails disappear, it's flounder because mm-hmm. they grab a hold and just, you know, they don't let go.
Yeah.
That's how they feed. So I think that you know, when you feel that little tick, that's that flounder grabbing it and all he's got is the tail. And then when you go to set the hook, you rip the tail off.
Mm-hmm.
I think that happens more often than we realize.
What are your thoughts on that, Caleb, when you're missing the tail and I started working it faster and all of a sudden got hooked up?
It goes all sorts of different ways. Like Scott said, you take it away from them real quick and you get the reaction bite. But it can definitely go the other way too, especially the topwaters. I've won two tournaments by dead sticking topwater, stopping them. I'd work. And if I got a swirl, I'd let it sit there 10 or 15 seconds. And then, you know, boom, I put a YouTube video out about it.
Mm-hmm.
Something about we fished a pro tournament or something, I think what it's called. But it's time to change it up. If you're getting short struck, it's time to change it up. You know, I'm going to sit here and talk like an expert. I fished that tournament last week in Louisiana. And on day one, did really well. Day two, I bet I had over 100 fish refuse my bait. And I slowed it down. I sped it up. I did everything that you could possibly do. But the fact of the matter is, it's a good habit to change it up. You know, mm-hmm. if what you're doing is either A, not getting you bit, or B, getting you short struck, it's time to slow it down or speed it up. It's time to do something with it because, you know, after 10 minutes, the same thing, that gets old pretty quick.
Yeah, it definitely does. I did want to mention this while we were on the topic because I was in that, you know, back to the waiting aspect. And I meant to mention this because they do such a good, they're such good people and good friends. I was slipping around a little bit on that mud too, even though it was only up to my thighs at the deepest, you know, when I was wading. But that wade right, put the belt on. I usually use the wade right sling, but I put the belt on, which, you know, is like a vest and has that little, what do they call them, where you put your rod in, like, I forget, that way put the where you put the arrows in, whatever it's called. a quiver. And it has like a quiver for your rod. And boy, that one way not to slip is to make sure you have both your hands free, you know, because I had the rod back there and I was trying to move to the other side of this little creek. Because I was really determined, there was a lot of bait working, man. I was like, there's got to be something there. So I went all the way across, and I was slipping and sliding all across the mud, you know, did the whole wide base like they talk about so you can walk better and all that stuff. It helped to be able to kind of balance myself like I'm on a trapeze. I had that weight belt right belt on. So it was practicing what I preach with those cats. It made a big difference. All right, so we talked about missing bites. And this was a question from one of our listeners. And I thought about you guys again. I'm thinking about you guys all the time. I don't know if that's bothersome or disturbing or not, but when I'm out on the water, I think about you guys a lot and things that we've talked about on the podcast. So I'm not going to, I never really mentioned the listeners' names when they send in a question, unless they ask me to or say it's okay or whatever. I think all three of us might disagree with this question, so I don't want to embarrass the guy or anything, but I think it's worth talking about because people need to know this. The question is, you know, and I'm not sure he realized, you know, where he was on the bay, and maybe that's why he asked the question. But here's the question. When did the etiquette change? If someone is fishing in a drain to a back lake, when did it become okay to blow past them without slowing down to an idle? I must have missed the memo. And you guys disagree with me if you want, but I was thinking, he was in a place where I think most boats tend to go through on plane, or they can't go through. And certainly when you're on a thoroughfare like that, Caleb, I'm going to start with you. A lot of times if I can, I'll slow down just out of courtesy, but when you're going to a very common back lake, very common place to fish, I'm always alert looking for kayakers, cause I don't want to barrel into a kayaker, and you know, which two back lakes I like to fish the most, but I'm still on plane. If you're in one of those places, all due respect, sir, I think you have to expect someone to be coming in on plane, right?
Yes. Yes. The answer is yes. you know, it's different thoughts from different folks. I know I think I plugged my YouTube twice in this one. I did a video where I brought a kayaker in and said, I said, what do you want us to do? And the comments that were on that video and the kayaker that I brought in to the video, they all said, get past me, yeah. You know, don't hurt me, but get past me. That being said, if I'm going into, I know every inch of all of those canals around my home waters. And if it's somewhere where I can slow down and putt by, I'll do it. If I'm somewhere that I don't really know, and I'm trying to stay on plane and keep my boat and myself out of harm's way, I'm going. Mm-hmm. It just know that if you are in a what do you call it, a thoroughfare,
yeah.
If you're in a thoroughfare and there's big water on both sides of you, there's going to be people come past you. It's going to happen. Unfortunately, myself, I know how to run my boat where I don't throw a big wake at you. If you're in a spot where I have to turn away from you, and I know I'm gonna throw a big wake, I'll figure it out. But there are a lot of folks out there that don't know that, and they're just gonna come past you. My kids set up a basketball goal in the street, and somebody got mad when a car came past them. That's just the way it works.
Yeah.
You want to sit there and fish it? Nobody's mad at you about it. Just don't be mad whenever somebody comes past you. Because there's a, not so much in Matagorda, but once you start heading east from there, there's a lot of places that we cannot slow down. We cannot shut down to get past you, especially if you're in a boat and you're taking up half of the space that we have to run. Then we really are going to drag shell or something if we slide over and slow down. A prop costs $850 a stay. I'm not gonna eat up $850 because, you know, that's where you're at. Fish there all you want, but we're going to come past you. And sometimes we might clear you by 4 or 5 inches. The Rojo Classic, I think 2 years ago, 2 years ago, the Rojo Classic, there's a back lake in Matagorda. It's got a rock wall on both sides going into it. It's an underwater rock wall that unfortunately, not a lot of people know about, and it's taken some lower units. And then there's shell on both sides. And Taylor and I were fishing that tournament. We were heading home, and there is a boat, I kid you not, turned side. They were in the intercoastal, but they were turned sideways to the mouth of that lake, cutting it off. And, you know, fun fishing, I might keep going. I got $20,000 on the line. I'm going, Jack. Mm-hmm. And I think that dude's, he's running a Suzuki 25 now, because the zero on the 250 was stuck to my rub rails. It's just the way it works. Taylor looked at me and said,
the reason I'm laughing so hard is because I believe that 100% sure that you got on, right on him like that.
Taylor looked at me and said, you really went for it. I said, oh, we're going, baby. Let's go.
Scott, I know this is something that you have, some pretty good opinion on, because it kind of depends also like which little finger of a drain or bayou or whatever you're on, where the boat should not be running on plane. But if you're on that thoroughfare, even though it's only 10 feet wide, but boats go in and out of there, I know you have some opinion on that. And let's start hour two of the Bite Me Fishing Show with that next.